Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. Not doing good in terms of keeping up with these. I'm still trying to get it out weekly, but I would have liked to get the books more fresh in my head from when I read them, if that makes any sense, because I'm always like, I think I'm in January now, and I should be in March. But anyway, just a couple of things is I'm making my way through HBO Max's Warrior. Man, that show is so good. It's so addictive, and I would highly, highly recommend it to anybody that loved HBO's Deadwood. Because it's like a show in the 1800s, but in San Francisco, and it involves Chinatown, and it's really, really good. I'm just loving it. Yeah, and the other thing that I want to talk about briefly is I watched Snyder's cut on Justice League. I enjoyed that quite a bit. It was interesting to see the tone of the movie change. I liked it more than the original, but in a few areas I didn't. And the things that I want to talk about just briefly is last episode I talked about the scene that I don't know where the fuck it came from. Like, I don't know who wrote this in, but one of the interesting scenes in the Snyder cut. No spoilers on that particular one, but it still makes me laugh just thinking about it. And I talk to my wife it a lot. But the Aquaman scene, there's some more Aquaman scenes in there, but there's one that's very interesting because Aquaman goes back into the ocean, and he has like this like he's on that piece of land where all the people sort of worship him. Like he's in the bar in the original movie. They have that still same scene where Bruce goes to confront Arthur and try to recruit him, and Arthur's like, "You're really a bat," It's like he doesn't want to join him initially. And then he walks out later. This is after he goes in the water. No, this is after Bruce talks to him and follows him out the door, and he takes off his shirt, and then there's this singing gr women. These women just start singing his praises, I guess. And then one has to go pick up his shirt and sniff it. I just can't get over that scene. I don't know why. It's just so bizarre. And I like bizarre. It's just so weird. You're like, why is this scene there? Like, who thought that? That's like some two drunk people in a bar thinking about, oh, I'm gonna do this in Aquaman. What happens if a woman sniffs his shirt? But overall, I liked the movie better. I thought it gave better interpretations of Cyborg for sure. It changed the tone of Flash so he didn't look like a bumbling idiot, like he didn't know what he was doing. Added a lot to his character. Threw in Iris, which is pretty cool. where I think it hurt was Aquaman. I think it. I think the scenes that the Whedon version added some humor to his character, and I kind of liked it because I'm a big fan of Batman Brave and the Bold Aquaman, who's outrageous, and I thought they just made him a little too one tone. And they didn't add to it. This movie didn't add to what we've already seen in his movie, or I kind of liked him having a lighter tone. And you could see like the Whedon shots, or they took out like all the Whedon cuts. And there was that one where he has that lasso around him, and he starts saying things like, "Oh, I'm scared," and he gets real like human. Instead of being the tough Aquaman that he is because he has the lasso on him. and he's telling the truth and getting real emotional. See, I like that. I like that weed in the Whedon cut. So that's one thing that's cut that I'd like. So I'm going to talk about things that they cut that were Whedon things that I liked more. But overall, I like the Snyder cut better. It was a little long, in my opinion. I couldn't watch it in one sitting for sure. I broke it up into three sittings. But I know a lot of people that were able to sit through the entire cut. Because it's so long, do I think I'll ever see it again? I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'll be willing to sit down through a 4-hour movie. Just like never rewatched the Lord of the Rings movies because they were so long. And I don't have an attention span. It's just that's a long time. It really is a long, long time. But so the scenes that I missed from the Whedon cut, I missed the Aquaman like being having a little more, I don't know, personality or wit. Like I missed the scene where Wonder Woman walks in on Bruce and he's got all those cuts and bruises all over his back and she sees his humanity. And in the comics, they've always had this like sexual tension between the two. Like Joe Kelly's run and a couple of other runs and Batman Hayetica, I think it's Hayetica or it was like a hardcover. And they've explored it some in the New 52 Justice League and a couple other areas, and I really like that. I really like that scene, and that was cut. So that's a scene that I enjoyed more in the Whedon cut. So I enjoyed Aquaman more in the Whedon cut, and I think Flash and Cyborg were better in the Snyder cut. The third thing that I liked better in the Whedon cut. And this is a little bit of a spoiler, is when they bring Superman back to life, and there's a lot more scenes added to the Justice League trying to bring Superman back to life. And in the movie, Batman says, I gotta go to Plan C or whatever the heck it is. And he calls in Amy Adams, Lois Lane, you know, and she shows up and she's able to calm down Clark, stop him from killing the rest of the Justice League because he just like woke up from death and he's a little berserker mode because he saw the Justice League as a threat. Well, I like that Batman like forward thought that Lois could control the situation. Whereas in the Snyder cut, she came to the conclusion she just happened to be there near that ship where they brought him back to life and then happened to drive up in a cab at that time, and Batman had nothing to do about calling her. And I so those are the three things that I thought were better in the Whedon. The Josh cut. So, but other than that, I liked everything more in the Snyder cut. Having the black suit, I don't really care. There's a fourth thing I sort of liked because it added a little bit of humanity to the movie, is in the Josh cut. There is in the one theatrical release when they go to battle Steppenwolf in that I think it's Russia or wherever it is, somewhere in the Ukraine. They go to visit, you know, fight that last battle. I liked that family that was there because it added a little bit of humanity to like what they were going through, and then. So I did like that, and they were not in the movie at all. Oh, and there's, man, Maybe I do like the other cut better, because it's shorter. I don't know. Now that I'm talking about it, but the other scene that I liked a lot was the extras. The Superman and Flash race, that was not a Snyder thing. I love that. That was cool for anybody that's been reading the races for, since I was a kid in the 70s, and before that, I think they've had them in the 60s. But that's always been an awesome thing to see Superman Flash race. I had the Treasury Superman versus Flash edition as a kid. I don't remember where I got it from, but me and my friend Eloy would just look at that thing and we'd constantly argue about who won the race. And it's interesting on like who sided with who, like who's rooting for Flash and who's rooting for Superman. And my argument is there's nobody faster than the Flash. I mean, Superman can, yeah, keep up with him, but my friend said, "But look how it was drawn." And I didn't see it. But anyway, that was taken out. And the other thing I liked, it looked in the theatrical release, it looked like Batman was like kind of going off on his own to make the ultimate sacrifice. Like, I'll cover for you, I'm willing to die. In the Snyder cut, it didn't seem like that. So, I don't know. That's like six or seven things that I liked better in the other movie, but everything else I think played out. I liked Cyborg better. I liked that they fleshed out Flash. I liked that they had more Lois. There's another character that they added. There's several characters that they added to the Snyder cut that I think were important that I don't understand why they didn't have them to begin with is like Darkseid. I don't get it. Like, he should have been there at the beginning. You had a scene there with more of the new gods, not the new gods of Apocalypse. So you get to see like really quick glimpses of other characters, and then there's more Desaad. So, and then there's another character. There's two characters that are Justice League. Well, one's a Justice Leaguer, and one of them is a Justice Leaguer, but as a different character. And I don't want to say what those are. So there's two characters. One of them was put there, and I don't like. I think they should have exploited that just a little bit more. At least I would have liked it if they did. The other character made a lot of sense, but he hadn't gotten his powers yet. But I watched that, and then I watched Falcon and Winter Soldier, and that show is awesome. Like, it's really clicking with me. More so than the WandaVision. WandaVision was more of a mystery. Like, there's no secrets in this one. Like, it's just unfolding as you see it. And WandaVision, you're always like wondering, like, well, what's going on? What? Who's this? And who's going to show up next? And you don't have that kind of thing with Falcon and Winter Soldier. You just have like jam-packed action, and the opening scene is just incredible. But I'm gonna have to get to reading comics really, really soon because I have a ton to read for Geek Brunch, and I haven't read anything for it. I could have. I went to get my COVID shot, and after the COVID shot, I went to work for a couple hours, and then I had a doctor's appointment, so I went to the doctor's appointment. And God, I glad I didn't wash my car. I almost went to wash all the crud, from the snowstorms off of my vehicle because we had a lot of snow last week. But it's snowing again. So I thought we were gonna have an okay weekend. Maybe we will, but maybe there's gonna have be snow in the forecast, which is why when I came home, I told Harley, we walked this morning, but she wanted to walk again, and I told her, I don't think we should go, and it was a good call because it's snowing again, and it looked overcast, and it's like the temperature dropped like 20 degrees, but between the time I got home and the time after I opened up my DCBS box, which came in today, man, it has a lot of comics. Now, a couple of last things I want to briefly talk about. this is speculation on my part, but I think Diamond is going to be a thing of the past. And I don't know what that means, but I'm gonna kind of miss it because of the legacy of what it was to me. And the reason I say that is because Marvel is moving to Penguin Random House, and DC already moved to Lunar, and I think they do their trades through Penguin Random House. So, Marvel's moving not just their trades and hardcovers and collected editions to Penguin Random House, but they chose them for their comic book distributor. So, between the losing DC and Marvel, that's like 90% of their business. So I don't know how they're going to exist. Like they did say that comic shops will still be able to get their Marvel books through Diamond. But I don't know if that's going to be beneficial for comic shops to stay with Diamond when they can go directly to the source of Penguin Random House. And I asked my comic shop guy what he thought about it, and he said, I wouldn't worry about it as a consumer. It's going to probably be transparent to you. And he wasn't hurt about going to Penguin Random House directly because he's not happy with Diamond, mostly because of damages and missed shipments over the years have put like a bad taste in his mouth, whereas he's really happy with Lunar in terms of not having as much damages and things getting there packed better, and he feels better about the way things are moving. So I think if he can, he's gonna jump to Penguin Random House, and there might be a handful of comic shops that do that. And my big question is, what does that mean? What I think it means to me as a consumer is no more previews, and I love the previews magazine, but I think it's going to be the way of the dodo. Marvel has their own supplement, so in theory they could still publish the catalog, but there's a lot of other publishers that are, I mean, there's like, I think there was like five other independent publishers that are moving their trades and hardcovers to Penguin Random House or other distributors. One of them's going to Lunar, maybe a Scout. But it is a weird world, and I think DC is saving money, like not printing the DC previews. Like, I don't know. They're like, why should I print this crap when people can see it online? It makes sense, but I'm one of the old school that loves to just sit down and drop the previews in front of me and read it from cover to cover, and then goes in the bathroom. Yeah, you don't need to know. It's too much information, but when you're when you're on the can, it's a great magazine to find more stuff. I guess it's not good for your pocketbook, but spend a lot of time reading previews and Marvel previews, and I've stopped doing that with DC Connect because it's such a pain in the ass to bring up that digital PDF. But they recently, what they've been doing is DC sends out these flyers. I'm going to call them flyers. They're like a little pamphlet, and they call that DC Connect. And what it allows people to do is they get a poster. So on the outside, if you fold it out, it's sort of like a poster of an upcoming comic. And on the inside, it's sort of like a checklist. It may have a couple of cover images. And you can like give that to your retailer if you want. Say, well, I want Batman and Detective and Harlequin and Justice League. And you could check it off and they'll subscribe to you for that. They're going to stop printing that as well. The other thing that DC is doing is they're raising the prices of a lot of their ongoing titles like Batman, Justice League, and they're going from $3.99 to $4.99, which means that if you got the cardstock variant, it goes up a buck too. So everything goes up a buck. I think you're going to get more page count. I know you're getting more page count because there's two stories in all those books. So you are getting more content to read and consume. But the $3.99 book, in terms of DC, is almost going the way of the dodo. So that's some interesting stuff. It really is. We'll see what that means going forward. This week in Kickstarters, I received Eerie Magazine, and it's spelled EYRIE, number 2 and 3, because I missed the number 2 Kickstarter, but they had an option to get number 2 and 3. And I think they had an option to get number 1, 2, and 3. I got OBS, The Devil Went Down to Georgia, issue number 1. This is a Kickstarter from No Sleep Evolution. And I think Evolution is turning into No Sleep for some reason. Don't know why, but it is. Maybe it's a different branding that is better branding, I guess. The Few and the Cursed, Shadow Nations, got that. It takes place in the West. And that's it for Kickstarters this week. So, having said that, we're gonna go into the weekly reads. And I'll be right back once I tally what happened that week. So stand by. I forgot I already totaled this stuff. So I can start right away. We'll go over the shows, and every show that I watched and movie I watched, I gave a 4 out of 5. So I'll talk about these. WandaVision, I gave a 4 out of 5. I thought that was pretty solid. I like the first 3 episodes like a lot more than what happened later as the show progressed. And I don't know, maybe it was that sitcom stuff. I just really clicked with me. I felt like I was watching Dobie Gillis or some of the old shows. And as it progressed, I liked it. And the only thing I think they fell flat with is they introduced a character and they didn't exploit it. It turned out to be nothing. And I think they could have linked in something. They could have linked in, I'll just say they could have linked in the X-Men and they didn't do it. They had the opportunity and they threw you a bone, but they didn't do it. Another 4 out of 5 that I watched, and I think this one was on Netflix, and but I'm not 100% sure if it was on Netflix or Amazon Prime, but I'm gonna go with Netflix. It was a movie called, well, I'll tell you who it starred. It starred Jason Momoa, And it had Keanu Reeves. And you're like, what is this? What is this? It was a movie called Bad Batch. And what it is it's a very weird movie, but it's very unique. But it's about a post-apocalyptic world. And there's this isolated town of protection. And for some reason, it doesn't say why or what happened, they're escorting a 20, I would say a 18 to 20-year-old girl out. And they leave her out of the chain gate and say, you're on your own now. They give her a gallon of water and her backpack of personal items. And she just starts goes walking. Well, there are people out there that are muscle-bound cannibals. And well, I'll say that our lead character loses something because of cannibalism. But she's still our lead character. But Jason Momoa is part of those cannibals. And then there's another like town that's sort of under the protection of Keanu Reeves, but he keeps them suppressed through drugs and weird entertainment and stuff like that. And he has a whole harem of women that he impregnates and gets women and grows his harem. And it is so bizarre. And I'd recommend it for people that like to take chances on post-apocalyptic stuff and take chances on stuff that's just out of the norm and weird. So that was Bad Batch. And then this we'll switch it to Hulu. And we had A Teacher. And this is about a teacher that's seduced by a student and things don't go well. It was based on a movie, but this is a short story based on that movie. And I think the movie was a foreign film. But another 4 out of 5. Really, really good on Hulu. I'd recommend it. If you like things like that are suspenseful, like Fatal Attraction and Crush and the Marky Mark one. What is that one called? Fear. If you like that kind of stuff, this is in that vein, but not as crazy. Like, not in terms of it's just crazy what happens to their lives. More of a realistic than psychological thriller. But we'll go to the comics. That week there were only 13 comics, one Scout, one Image, 8 DC, 2 Dark Horse, 1 Antarctic. We'll start at the 3 out of 5s. We had DC Batman and Robin Adventures number 21. This is one that I bought from a friend because it was signed by Yvonne Craig, who was Batgirl in the Batman 66 TV show. And it was signed by her, and it has Batgirl on the cover. And I bought it from Paul Tessenier, and who's a friend of mine online that we met through the Valiant podcast. And this was about Riddler capturing Commissioner Gordon, and then it's taking Batgirl to save him. But it was sort of an interesting comic. I liked it. It wasn't like something out of the that was deep or anything, but it was something that was fun and that I could see in the animated series, and that's what this comic is based on. So it was a decent book. I enjoyed it. A 3 out of 5 means I liked it. The other 3 out of 5 was, and as I read it, I was pretty hard on this. And as I read it again for DC Spotlight, I gave it a 4 out of 5, but I gave it a 3 out of 5 on my initial read. So I liked it more on the second read, and things changed for me. And I think the more that I think about it, it's really a 4 out of 5, especially for the grifter story for me personally. But I gave it a 3 out of 5. It had two stories. It had a Bruce story and a Cole Cash story, who's the grifter. So Bruce and Batman are believed to be dead by Gotham and the Magistrate. And we find out that Bruce did survive. The second story is a Magistrate is collecting heroes to go after Cole Cash. They capture him, and he's put in the back of a military van with Luke Fox. Grifter is propositioned to get Luke out of Gotham for $50,000. They have a short run-in with the Black Mask Gang as well, and they get away and end up in the Huntress's lair. Why it was so interesting is it felt like a Lethal Weapon type movie. Like just Luke Fox and Cash, Cole Cash in like a Lethal Weapon movie type thing. And I liked it. It really worked for me. Your mileage may vary, but I did give it, which means I liked it. So, in all fairness, when I reread it, it became a higher grade, because I saw things that I might not have caught on the first read, and I enjoyed it more. We'll get into the 4 out of 5s. We had Future State Superman, Wonder Woman. This is a Superman has to stop Solaris, which is a sun from destroying Earth. Before he gets there. A Brazil sun god who hangs out with the moon god is with Wonder Woman. So there's two gods that are like in Brazil with Wonder Woman. And Solaris is rebooting, and Superman makes a challenge. The next day, it looks like Superman's powers are going berserk. Yaraflor saves the rich politician from a helicopter and makes him a promise to make things better with the overpopulation. It was I like this story, and I really like this Yaraflor character. I like the way the Solaris being was coming to destroy Earth. I enjoyed this quite a bit. I liked it very much, and that's why I was a 4 out of 5. I then read Time Masters 1 through 3 for DC Spotlight. This I own the original series, and man, it's been a long time since I read that. But I reread it on the app because on DC Spotlight, which is on DCNoisePodcast.com, me and Kyle cover some new books like Future State, and then we'll cover something that's on the app that we can both co cover together and that ensures us that we both have access to. And we pull that information from the listeners. So every other week there is a poll, and it contains 4 books, 2 picked by me and 2 picked by Kyle. And then the vote determines which book we end up recovering on the show. And Time Masters was the winner. And this is Rip is working on a time device when it gets sabotaged. He finds out it's by one of his employees named Hassan. He and Jeff move to New York. Jeff is his coworker, where they start to work on a device again, and they ask Booster Gold for some superhero help. Booster Gold, in turn, goes back to the Justice League and says, "Who's with me? Who'll help these guys?" And nobody says, "Hey, we'll help you." Later, he is looking to hire an assistant who was just fired for having an affair with the professor at a university. Well, it turns out that that professor at the university was Cave Carson. And this woman goes to work for Rip Hunter. On the way to the lab, someone is trying to run them off the road. The Illuminati, who you learn later on who that is out to destroy Rip's new location. The new assistant's troublesome brother joins the group and goes back to dinosaur times where he needs to be rescued. Rip's brother goes back to Washington times, like George Washington times, and tries to stop the Illuminati back in time. They're trying to find out who's leading the Illuminati because they're having battles throughout time. Booster's partner goes back to the Old West and has a confrontation with Jonah Hex. I don't remember Booster being there, but I guess he was. Scalp Hunter and Batlash. So you'll see like a lot of characters that is in that's in this show, this Time Master series. Like there's that's a West characters, and then you get some other characters later on, and there's superhero appearances like Green Lantern, Superman, Martian Manhunter. You have characters like Viking Prince and Tomahawk, you know, like DC's library through time, so it's a lot of fun. We then have Hot Days and Cocaine Nights number 2. It's more backstory on the sister and how she got into cocaine business with her brother and rock guitarist by selling cocaine to the music industry, and it's based on a true story. That's what makes this book fun. It's really well written, it's well drawn, it's from Antarctic Press, and it's quite enjoyable. We then have Spawn 248. This is where Haunt comes into the story. Haunt confronts Mark. He actually came in a few issues earlier. If you remember, Haunt was. Oh, man, was it Capullo? I think it was McFarlane, Capullo, and Kirkman, but I could be wrong on that. I know Todd did the inks. Let me go look it up. Because it's really a good series, and you owe it to yourself to check it out. Greg Capullo, I was right. Greg Capullo, Ryan Ottley, Robert Kirkman, and Todd McFarlane. So what you'll see in the early issues is art by Greg Capullo and Ryan Ottley. Todd McFarlane inks on both of them, and Robert Kirkman writing the story. And then it later changes to Joe Casey and Nathan Fox. So check it out. It ran in 2009 to 2011. It had a good debut, like in terms of sales numbers, but then I think it started to drop off as time went on. And one of my goals is to have all the Todd McFarlane comics that they're out. And Haunt, I do have a full collection of. I have a full collection of Savior. I'm working on Kiss and The Crow, and of course Spawn, which I'm about 15 issues out. Star Wars: Jabba the Hutt from Dark Horse. This was highly entertaining. Jabba goes against Gar, also known as Sano Bopor. Could be important. In a battle of bartering wits, he ends up turning his bodyguard, the bomb detector. So that guy Gar, he has a bodyguard, but Jabba uses his wits to like realize that the bodyguard was guarding Gar when Jabba knew that Gar destroyed the bodyguard's world. So then the bodyguard turns on his master. It's a really good story. We then have Star Wars Boba Fett number 1, also from Dark Horse. This is the bounty on Barracuda. Gorga the Hutt falls for Anacharo the Hun and wants to impress her father Orko the Hun. Orko is having issues with pirates and Barracuda. Boba Fett is hired and slowly taking on some of the pirates, and finds he needs Magwit the magician to infiltrate Barracuda. They kill Barracuda and serve him up for dinner to Orko the Hun. That's a really cool story. 4 out of 5. And let's get another 5 out of 5s. We have Future State Justice League number 1, and just based on listening to like two or three podcasts that I listen to. Maybe I listen to like five podcasts, and I think maybe two of them talked about this book. I listened to, I can't even remember all the podcasts I listened to, but I listen to Brightside Chat Weekly. I listen to Comics for Fun and Profit. I listen to 11 O'Clock Comics. I listen to the, what is that comic book store co podcast? Challengers, the Challengers podcast. What else do I, oh, the Rob Liefeld podcast. And I think Nerdy Legion, but it's not on anymore. So I don't listen to it too much anymore, especially if Nick's not on there. Nick and Martin, they have to be together. There's the magic there. It's kind of like the DC Noise magic. Once the team sort of broke up, the magic was gone. But and that was my podcast with Keith Knutson and Daryl. Like it had to be the three of us. It really DC Noise turned into something, and that's why I changed the name of the podcast to keep it going to DC Spotlight, because it became something different. What else do I listen to? I think that's about it. But anyway, two of the podcasts I think talked about this one, and they weren't as crazy about it as I was, but I loved it. Future State Justice League number one. We have John as Superman, Yara Flor as Wonder Woman, Luke as Batman, the daughter of Aquaman and Mara is Aquawoman, and a new Flash. The previous Justice League was destroyed because they let each other's identities be known to each other, and this team has a charter not to do so. The Legion of Doom, led by Professor Ivo and T.O. Morrow, which are old Justice League villains, want to destroy the new league. It includes Despara, and if you've read Justice League long enough, you know that Despara is offspring of Despero, and Amaze X, which is a new version of Amazo. Cobalt Blue, if I remember correctly, that's like a Flash villain. The Screech Owl, the Flood is an Aquaman villain, and Ultraviolet Lantern. They are killed by the Hyper Clan. So those villains are killed by the Hyper Clan as they were plotting against the Justice League. And the Hyper Clan takes the image of the Justice League. Merlin and the Knights are seeking to kill all the heroes in magic. This is the backup story. Detective Chimp and Zatanna are working together to find the others. They find a new ragman that leads them to find Madame Xanadu and John Constantine. They revive a grown-up Khalid. If you remember, in DC, Khalid became Dr. Fate in the DCU. So DCU didn't last long. It was a bridge between DC 50, New 52 and DC Rebirth. In between there became DCU, spelled YOU. And it had different series like Prez and Bizarro, and they were exploring a lot of different titles, and I forgot where I was going with it, but that had Khalid as Dr. Fate during that time frame. And at this time, Detective Chimp has Entigrin inside of him, the demon, so it's not hosted by Jason Blood. It was an interesting Future State story. I really enjoyed this Justice League. The other one that I rated 5 out of 5, and it's weird because the team books really hit it off for me, was Justice League Teen Titans number one. In the future, things are not so bright, and the Titans are met with Psybeast, which is a amalgamation of Cyborg and Beast Boy. We see glimpses into the past when the Titans were training new students, and they find the Red X costume. Red X was a character that was introduced in Titans Go, and so his first appearance is in the Titans Go comic, but his first what they call the real appearance is in this comic book. In the future, Dick dons the Deathstroke costume and frees Red X from his prison cell. It was a really well-told story. And finally, the last 5 out of 5 was Yasmin number 6. One of the parents tell the police that Yasmin is ISIS because she watches Homeland, which is such a weird thing. Yasmin has to recall her near-death experience when escaping ISIS and prove her innocence to, because they're considering her a terrorist and she's absolutely not. Very good story. I'm gonna go ahead and go over the books from January 25th to January 31st. So that'll take us through the end of the January month of 2021. We'll go over the TV shows and movies first. We had 4 out of 5s. Seems Like Old Times. This was a Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn movie. Brought back a lot of memories. I saw it when I was very, very young and loved the movie. And it's about a guy who's wanted for a crime. I think it was murder. And goes back to his ex-wife, who's remarried, played by Charles Grogan, or Grodin. And it's like a comedy. I watched the next 4 out of 5 was Arrow, the final 2 episodes. I finished the CW show. I wanted to finish it. I watched every single episode of the CW, and I watched the last 2 Arrow episodes, and they were really well done. The last one had a lot of emotion to it. I really liked it. Sorry, I gotta take a drink. All right. So, the 5 out of 5s were Meet the Millers, which I've seen for about, I'm probably going on 30 times. I almost watch this movie once a week because it's always on TV on some station, and I can't stop watching it. I love Meet the Millers. Not as much as my wife loves it. My wife loves that movie. I love it, but I don't love it as much as her. She loves it, loves it, loves it. I rewatched Deadpool because I was listening to Rob Liefeld's Rob Servations, and he was talking about the making of Deadpool, and he was talking about how he was in a clip, and I was like, I don't remember him being in a clip, and he was talking about a lot of the specific scenes, and I wanted to go watch it now that I had all this behind the scenes information, and I gave it a 5 out of 5. I loved it when it was at the theaters, and I loved it even more knowing this extra tidbits from Rob Servations. The other 5 out of 5 is The Little Things. This was an H. I'm really getting my money's worth on HBO Max. They have premieres almost every other week of new movies that would have been at the theater that go directly to HBO Max. And I've been watching the hell. Like I told you, I'm watching Warrior now. We just watched Snyder's Justice League. I watched The Little Things. I gave this a 5 out of 5, and a lot of my friends had mixed reviews on this movie because of the ending. And I gave it a 5 out of 5 because of the ending, because it has this ambiguity to it. Like it's not set. This is a Denzel Washington movie. Jared Leto is a killer. Which you don't know you, up front, he's a serial killer. At least you think he's a serial killer. You don't really know. But I love this movie. It was so good. It was like one of those movies that you're like, I'm gonna catch it because it was going to the theaters and see if I like it. So I didn't go in with like high expectations, but it like exceeded every expectation that I had. So that's why it was a 5 out of 5. It was like, whoa. And I like things that I wanted it to end one way, but it didn't end that way, and I think I liked it even more. So when you surprise me, I thought it was gonna go the way of Seven, like the movie Seven. Like I thought it was going that way, and it didn't go that way. So I was like, yeah, this is fucking awesome. 5 out of 5. So, we get to comics. That week we had a total of 24 comics, one Image, four IDW. Good week for IDW. First, second, one, DC 10 and Ablaze 8. Let's start at the 3 out of 5s. This was an Image comic. It was a hardcover. I thought I was gonna love this one a lot more. It's weird though, because after I was telling Bill about it, Bill didn't buy it because it was Alex DeCampi, and I don't think he doesn't like her work, but she hasn't like set him off, like, I gotta get an Alex DeCampi work. There's not one comic I think that he like completed it in trade, so he might try the first issue, and he likes it enough, but not enough to buy the trade, because he that's how he buys comics. He'll buy first issues and then decide if he likes it and then buy the trade. Unless it's Spawn or Savage Dragon, then he always gets it. And then he has this rule that if it's 3 issues or less, that he'll consider just getting the singles. But anyway, I was talking to him about Dracula, motherfucker, and the more I talked about it, the more I liked it. So I was talking my I could have talked myself into a 4 out of 5, but I originally gave it a 3 out of 5. Artistically, Henderson, I think, is the artist. Really well done colors and art. Erica Henderson, I think. It's the Brides of Dracula decide to take out their master in the 1800s, and Dracula's drawn as this real ambiguous, I'm gonna say Cthulhu, but no, it's not looking like Cthulhu. But you know how Cthulhu looks weird? Well, this Dracula doesn't look like a human Dracula. It looks more like somebody's nightmare of a Dracula creature. But he is taken out by the wives. And then later, in current time, I think in the 70s, no, in the 70s, he's released by a 70s actress. And that actress is very similar to, at least it reminded me of the actress that was killed by Charles Manson. I think it was Sharon Tate. But based on what I know of Sharon Tate and like what I saw in some of her movies and what I saw in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and stuff like that, it just reminded me of that. And then Jonathan Harker is a black photographer that sort of works for like an Inquirer magazine, and he works with the Rives to imprison Dracula again. But the first time I read it, I was like, oh, my expectations were so damn high that I gave it a 3 out of 5. The more I discussed it, and it was a one-way discussion, which is weird because I can't usually convince myself that something's better than what I read, but I did. But I gave it a 3 out of 5. I stuck with the original. I stuck with my guns there. The 4 out of 5s, I continued my journey with Time Masters. I read 4 through 8 to finish the series. So, Time Masters, I think the what won was Time Masters 1 through 4, but I wanted to finish it, so I kept reading. The team, which consists of Bonnie, Tony, Cave Carson, Jeff, Dan, and Bonnie's brother, try to make trips into the past to stop the Illuminati. None of that works, so Bonnie goes to the future. We find that the Illuminati is led by Vandal Savage. You have various stars as Tomahawk, which I talked about previously, Jonah Hex, Viking Prince, Scalp Hunter, and many others. Booster Gold, Animal Man, Green Lantern help them out in their adventures. I think there's some Martian Manhunter and Superman in there. And there's like a four-way love triangle between Bonnie, Cave Carson, Jeff, and Rip. And it's weird. They're all infatuated with Bonnie. So It is so weird. And Cave Karsten had that sexual relationship at the university, and that university, they threatened his job if he didn't like sever ties with her. So he had to actually fire her and then have her leave the university. And then she came back, and there was like a flirtatious thing with Jeff and Rip. And I don't know if Rip and her ever got it on, but I think her and Jeff did. But it was weird. Future State, the next Batman. The new Batman is being traced and hunted by the magistrate and the stormtroopers of the magistrate. Cassandra and Steph in prison and working to undercover to find Oracle. Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and Dee Dee are out to take out her creator. And Dee Dee's a brand new character. She's like an android or synthetic intelligent robot that was created, and that's why she's working with Catwoman and Poison Ivy to take out her creator, because he's a bad guy. The 5 out of 5s were Spawn 198. I'm loving this Spawn run. It is so much deeper than the current stuff, and it took me a while to get into it, but once I got into it and all the storylines, I think it's one of the best story arcs there is. But the symbiote of Spawn joins with Blood, he's the vampire guy, to fight Jim Downing. Jim Downing is the current Spawn in this run. As Sarah's in the hospital, Sarah got possessed as they went into the dark. And she came out, she was possessed by a being in the dark that kind of made her look like she was possessed by the devil. And she tried to kill Jim Downing, but now they fought, and now she's in a coma. This battle causes a manifestation of roaches, maggots, and beetles throughout New York City. Twitch finds a link to the numbers of beetles. The numbers that the beetles are making, so the beetles will actually make like symbols and numbers, and he finds a relationship that it's related to something about Jim Downing coming out of his coma. We have a Wonder Woman Dead Earth 1 through 4. This was Wonder Woman caused a nuclear war with Themyscira, which mutated the Amazons into monsters. Batman saved her for redemption. And she had killed Superman, so Wonder Woman actually killed Superman. Her gauntlets suppress her true powers, so you realize that Wonder Woman's even more powerful than you could ever imagine, and the gauntlets are put on her to suppress her powers, which is an interesting take. She fights with some of the last of humanity against her own sisters. It was a really good Elseworld type story. The next 5 out of 5 was Gung Ho, Volume 1, number 1 through 7, and Volume 2, number 1. The Reapers are like strange, like ape dog creatures that keep humanity at bay and in forts. Two kids are placed in the fort and have to survive many attacks. I personally feel like if you like the TV show Cobra Kai, this is like the kids are like a Cobra Kai, not in terms of karate, but in terms of relationships and stuff and conflicts. It's like Cobra Kai in a post-apocalyptic world. It is awesome. I absolutely adore this book. None of the stories let me down. I am 100% behind every character. Like, every character has purpose, and every character is so fleshed out that I just love this world. Gung Ho from Ablaze Comics. We then get into the one book. This took me a long, long time to read. Yes, I only did 24 comics, but this was like 600 pages. It was called Dragon Hoops. This is Gene Young. Let me see. I'll get his name right. He's the one that did Firstborn Chinese, and he did Superman and a couple other things. But let's look up Dragon. Oops. So I get his name right. Jean Loon Yang. I was close. But I didn't want to say it wrong. It's from First Second. This is a biography about a Christian basketball team in Oakland, California, and their journey to the championship. And Jean being a teacher of math and science and stuff at this high school and learning about how big basketball is to this community. And they're a private school. So it also has a weird thing about how it ties into real life about him getting to write Superman and some other things. But you learn a lot about these characters and their lives. And a couple of them he never got to know really well, so he didn't delve into some, their past because he didn't know them, but he did delve into the past of the players that he met and became close with. So it's his journey documenting his experience with this basketball team. So Jean Loon Yang essentially won an Eisner for firstborn Chinese. I think that's what it's called. Let me see if I can find it in my database. I remember buying this as it was my first San Diego Comic-Con and going to the my first Eisners. It's not in my database, so I'm not sure why it's not. American-born Chinese, so I'm glad that I looked it up. Yeah, he won an Eisner for it. So check that out. I haven't read it, but I did buy it. But I was interested in when I was at San Diego. It was like my first San Diego Comic-Con, and I didn't know like what the fuck I was doing. Because this is before I started going to Heroes in Baltimore and getting in the comic thing, and I was like, wow, I really understand the Eisners now because I've been there and I've seen it. And I was trying to go near all the tables of all the Eisner nominees and get the books, and support them at the time. And I ended up reading only like 4 of the 10 that I did purchase, not because of. For one thing, I'm a mood reader, but I just forgot. But at some point, I'm gonna have to find that book and read this. I don't know if it's with all my other trades or if it's still in the closet. I might have like a group of books that I bought in a bag from San Diego still there. But anyway, I gotta go do dishes. But that wraps up the books for the rest of January, and the 5 out of 5s were Spawn 198, Wonder Woman Dead Earth 1 through 4. Those are hardcovers. I mean, no, they're the extended black label DC books, which are like magazine size. They're really big. You have to buy magazine bags and boards for these things. Gung Ho, this from Ablaze. 1 through 7, Volume 1 and Volume 2, Number 1. Dragon Hoops from First Second. It's a hardcover, about 600 pages, I think. The other 5 out of 5s were Justice League Future State Teen Titans Number 1, and Yasmin from Scout Comics. Love that series, by the way. Highly recommend it. So that wraps up this episode. I want to thank you for listening to me babble for, let's see what we're going on here. We're going on an hour. I want to thank you for listening to me babble. And let me know what you thought of Justice League. I liked it a lot more than the original, but I did make some points to tell you which scenes I liked from the original. And I've never been a hater of any of the DC movies, to tell you the truth. I've liked them all. I tend to like the DC movies better than the Marvel movies, and I can't explain why. In terms of repeatability of watching and stuff like that, it has to be somewhere in the back of my mind that I'm a DC fan over Marvel. There has to be some kind of bias, because the quality is not is I mean the quality to me is equal, but I feel like the stories are different than the comics, and the Marvel ones are closer to the material, and I tend to like movies that I don't already know. I guess that's what I could explain. Whereas most people would, oh man, I loved Infinity Gauntlet. They're gonna go off of that, or something like that. And like the Spider-Man movies, like they're nothing like Spider-Man comics. So I like those. I like when they deviate. Like Guardians of the Galaxies to me deviates a lot from. So I guess Marvel does it too. Some of my favorite Marvel movies are ones that people don't like. Like Iron Man 3 is probably my favorite Marvel movie, and then Guardians following shortly after that. Where a lot of people will say that Captain America Winter Soldier is their favorite, or you know. So I'm like, I deviate. I'm different. My favorite DC movie is Joker. I love that movie. I've already seen it like 7 times. But anyway, you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. That's my email. Another place to reach me is at Mike Myers Brunch on Twitter. On Facebook, you can reach me at Geek Brunch Podcast. That's where that host this is what hosts Mike M's Weekly Reads, Geek Brunch Retro, and Geek Brunch Podcast. And then I have some other ones there that I need to do. I just don't have time. Mike M's Collector's Corner, which is always a lot of fun for me. I just haven't had time. And the CCPP, I can't remember what I called it, but it's a Kickstarter and obscure ways to get comic books, stuff that you can't order in previous magazines, and then I review comics from that. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk in a week or two. I wanted to do 2 weeks just in case I can't next weekend. Next weekend, yeah, next weekend I may not be able to record at all. Any podcasts, but I wanted to get one done, and I will get it released before I before next week. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Bye.